This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials.
What a difference a day makes. While grains did not follow through on yesterday's move, we are going to try to keep our mojo rolling.
Live from the apex of the week via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk! This afternoon, we'll talk with Naomi Bloom of Total Farm Marketing. And now, batting cleanup for the lollygagging Chip Flory, the pride of Chicago's Zahner Ag Hedge, Ted Seifert!
Woo! Yeah!
I'm adding extra vowels into words today. Hey, how do you like it?
I think it's interesting. It's Friday, man. You can do whatever you want.
Interesting means dumb. No, interesting means dumb. I read you loud and clear, buddy. I won't do much of that anymore. Much of it.
Okay. So I'm not sure we have a large enough sample size yet to say for sure.
Okay.
But I am starting. I'm gonna stick with interesting for now.
Okay. I'll take that. Yeah. Because it's not outright rejection, which is actually what I'm used to. You know.
Okay.
That I know what to do with.
Yeah. I don't like to do that to you, buddy, because, you know, you're a really nice guy and you're good at what you do. And
you don't want to clip my newsman wings, do you?
No, definitely don't want to clip the newsman wings. Those are
that's the sort of thing we really appreciate about you, Ted Seifert.
Absolutely. You know, it's what I come to do, man. I come to do.
Not a bad day in the markets.
No, really not. And man, you know, when we were doing this yesterday, it was kind of just had a feel like, oh man, we are standing on the edge of a cliff here. That was not fun. And I kind of like that we didn't really talk a whole lot of explicit market stuff yesterday. It was more digging deep into the ethanol market and in sort of broader picture stuff, right? Because I think there would have been some maybe assumptions made that, oh, you know, wow, this sell-off is maybe looks like it might start to accelerate and so on and so forth. But then you have today. And, you know, there was some really interesting stuff that went on here today. And I'm really happy that, you know, just the way this week played out and where we have our guests, I'm really happy to have Naomi on today. Because I think there's some definite things that we really want to talk about. In particular, you know, old crop corn and beans really took back pretty much all of the losses from yesterday. But But look at new crop corn and beans, not really so much. So what does that mean? You know, because you really have two different looking sets of charts between what's going on in old crop corn versus new crop corn, and same thing in beans. Mm-hmm. And I have some reasonings for that, I think, but I'm very curious to see what Naomi's going to say about that. And I don't know.
By the way, speaking of yesterday's show, you constructed a fantastic conversation with Jordan Fife from BioErgia. Yes. If you haven't, Erge, see, there's the extra vowel. I feel like it works there.
It worked that time.
Go back and check out that show from yesterday. It was very insightful and some great thoughts on ethanol. We held him clear over into the fourth segment, you know, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
It went on and on.
For sure. Oh, hey, listen, Jordan has fantastic insights into the ethanol market. I don't know anybody better than Jordan. And you know, I like talking about ethanol, but I'm going to say, I think yesterday, you know, I've filled in for Chip. I think it's almost about 130 times now. But I think yesterday was my favorite show maybe that I've ever done because Jordan's really knowledgeable. I like to talk about ethanol, but we got a chance to really explain some things that a lot of people don't necessarily understand, specifically the RIN market, right? Not everybody gets that part.
Because so many times you just hear like terms sort of thrown around. Oh, yeah, the RINs are going crazy. Do you believe this RIN thing?
What's
and
a RIN?
I know that there are folks out there. I had to learn what that is. You know, I wasn't born knowing what a RIN is. I think Chip probably was, but I wasn't. And I'm sure I'm not the only one.
For sure. Right. Right. Well, and so, and that's the thing is like, not only what is a RIN, but how does it affect ethanol demand, really? And yeah, wow, that was great. I really enjoyed that. And that's a show that you can go back to and listen to, you know, 2-3 months from now. And it's still kind of, it's still very valid. Like it, that's something that we can, yeah, I'm actually pretty proud about that one. Yes, it definitely has a shelf life.
You bet.
Yes. Yes. So as you said, guys, if you haven't listened to it, go back. I'm pretty proud of it. Hopefully you guys enjoy it. But
Magnum opus. Huh?
There you go. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. I was expecting some more vowels there, but okay.
opus.
That's better. All right, buddy. Let's see how many vowels you can pack into the news. I'm very curious.
Well, after attempting to work higher in overnight trade, the day session had wheat futures under pressure. May soft red futures marked the second close below the 100-day moving average, signaling technical bearishness ahead. The large volumes of precipitation over the U.S. plains during the weekend has eased some concerns over soil moisture, and expectations are rising for more rain into late next week. July hard red winter wheat a penny lower, 5.91¼. July soft red fell 2¾, 6.19¼. September spring wheat, 2 cents higher, 6.42. Ted.
Yeah, the wheat. You know, aside from new crop corn and beans, wheat was really the one that was lagging behind on the board today and did some technical damage. So it's really hard to say, wow, we've got old crop corn and beans looking like they want to break out to the upside, but then you've got wheat looking like it wants to break out to the downside. So how does that all reconcile? And I can't wait to hear Naomi's opinion on that.
On the week, July hard red winter wheat down 17.5 cents. Soft red, the July contract down 12¾ on the week. Well, on the corn side, once again, USDA reported a daily sale this morning of 800,000 metric tons of corn to China. That follows a string of daily sales to China announced this week. This time, the news supported fresh gains, Ted. This is China's ag ministry has launched a campaign to lower the content of corn and soy meal in animal feed. Rains outperformed forecasts this week in Argentina, but some forecasts are a little drier for next week. Central Brazil is expected to begin drying out for finishing Safrinha corn planting, but it is late, and crops will be tested with a normal end to the monsoon season. May corn futures 10¼ cents higher today, 5.56¾. July up 7½ cents, 5.37¾. December corn closed at 4.69¾. That's up 1¾ on the day.
Yeah, you just said a lot there, Davis. There's a whole lot going on for corn. Yes. You're right. The market was very excited about the sale that we had Friday morning, but it wasn't so much earlier in the week. And I think that's because the market had been anticipating some sales, but I think, thought we were done with that on Thursday. So to see it again on Friday was really encouraging. Almost 4 million metric tons for the week. Wow. And then you got weather, which, you know, Argentina's forecast is a little bit scary, but then you got Brazil, which is maybe a little bit favorable, but even still, we're pushing into that hot and dry. We're going to push this Safrinha corn crop into the limits of the hotter, drier season. So much going on there for corn. It ended up as a very good week, though, and let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, certainly up 17¾, the May contract was. Soybean futures regained most of what was lost in yesterday's session as futures bounced off the 40-day moving average. Big reports from USDA on planting intentions and March 1 inventories may keep price action choppy until the March 31 data release. May bean futures 21¼ cents higher, 14.16½. July up 23¼, 14.03¾. Novi beans 12.18 at the close, up 11¾ today. And on the week, May beans up 32.5 cents, Ted.
Woohoo, that's a big week. All right, everybody, we'll be talking to Naomi Bloom. Come on back to AgriTalk.
Cheap herbicides may sound like a bargain, but they can turn out to cost more than a grower might think. Steve Gum, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, is with us. Steve, why should growers focus more on what they risk losing than the dollars saved?
Well, Chip, it seems counterintuitive, but spending less money can actually cost growers more. The hits come from two sides. First, think about the front end, because if the herbicide is ineffective, they'll spend more money on another application. It'll likely have been less expensive to put down the single application of the effective herbicide to begin with. We see this all the time. And then on the back end, they may be costing themselves yield. Effective herbicides wipe out weeds fast, allowing the crop to grow with as little competition as possible. If you use an ineffective herbicide and your fields are littered with weeds at harvest, you're costing yourself yield and money.
Absolutely. Steve, what are the key considerations that will help us in selecting an effective herbicide?
Well, when it comes to selecting a herbicide program, look at the big picture. Choosing a herbicide with residual control and multiple effective sites of action will save weed management headaches down the road, and the right herbicide program can even pay back in yield.
Okay, so how can growers get into a cost per bushel mindset to make the right decision?
Well, less weed competition translates into more nutrients, sunlight, and water available for the growing corn crop, which leads to more bushels and extra revenue potential. So it's important to think about the cost per bushel. If the herbicide is a cheaper option but doesn't deliver the performance that maximizes yield, that cost per bushel will likely be higher overall. And if it's a product that delivers leading performance and drives higher yields, that cost per bushel will be lower overall. So it's important to not only think about cost per acre, but what is the return for that cost as well. And so if you think about 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron, you're looking at some pretty big ROI potential.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the right mindset to have right there. Thank you, Steve. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try Syngenta's online calculator at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. My name is Ted Seifert. I'm from Zahner Ag Hedge, and I'm filling in for Chip here on this fantastic Friday. I'm calling that because, wow, we had some really nice turnaround in the market today, for corn and beans at least, not so much for wheat. And we're going to be talking to Naomi Bloom about that from Total Farm Marketing. And I'm super excited to have my friend Naomi on the radio today on a Friday. This should be fun. Hey, but before we get to Naomi, you know, we've got cattle on feed on Friday afternoons, sometimes once a month. I want to report those numbers really quick, so I'm going to steal your newsman hat for a second, Davis. But cattle on feed, on feed, 102%, marketed 98%, placed 98%. So some interesting numbers. We will talk to Naomi about that a little bit later as well. But let's talk about row crops because that's where the fireworks were. Naomi, how's it going?
Good, Ted. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be with you today.
Absolutely. You know, I love having you on the show when I get a chance to host, and we usually do a good job. You know, it's always fun. So what do you think? I mean, yesterday it looked like the sky was falling. Corn down sharply, beans down sharply, new crop leading the way lower, and especially in soybeans. But then here today, it's a completely different look. You know, May beans up 11 and a quarter. No, I'm sorry. May beans up 24. May corn up 11 and a quarter. What was driving the strength here today, Naomi?
Well, you know, the overall thing with this market is that corn and beans are still just range bound overall. It's been a 2 month trading range of a sideways pattern. And that's just continuing. So the news overall of the additional Chinese purchase today, over 150 million bushels on the week, you know, I think that finally sunk into traders. You know, like, we knew that yesterday was a fluke because of the crude oil washout, so that just kind of took out those commodities with it. But even at the end of the day yesterday, everything for the grains was still just range-bound on support levels. So as you know, the fundamentals in this marketplace continue to be so friendly yet in the big picture. So any sell-off, I thought, oh, you know, China's going to come back in and do some buying. This is a great opportunity for those who wanted to do some re-ownership. So I think prices probably stay in this sideways pattern here until that March 31st report, until we get a better picture of where those quarterly stocks are going to be, and then, of course, how that affects the crop year going forward for supplies, and then, of course, with the planted acres number. But I'm super impressed with the market. Love it. Back above support. Just a decent weekly close then. You know, it was a very, very good that we had that solid close today to keep the weekly charts intact as well.
Yeah, I mean, really, where we closed on Thursday, we were kind of staring down into the abyss of a potential deeper correction than what we've seen since the inception of these rallies, and we really saved the day there on Friday. And again, you know, lots of sales to China this week. I think the market was expecting some of that, but as it kept going, I think that turned out to be a pretty big positive. My question for you, Naomi, is, you know, the market's been talking, or people around the market have been talking about the USDA needing to increase exports. And then now after seeing this flurry of activity that we had this week, do we think the USDA is going to be increasing corn exports on the next WASDE report?
Well, now I think that they do. Prior to this week, I thought, no, they're going to play it cool. They're going to play it conservative. But, you know, cumulative export sales now for corn are pretty much at 92% of the USDA forecast, and almost half of that projection, the export inspections, that's corn that's actually left the country already. We're almost up to about half of it. So I think the USDA now needs to maybe do some more tweaking and massaging. And I could see over the next two reports from the USDA that they need to bring down that ending stock number for corn maybe closer to 1.4 billion bushels, just because the demand for exports is strong. And I think we're going to see a stronger pace for ethanol growing as people are getting back out. You know, look at social media, how many people are traveling this week on spring break. Finally, I got to go to South Dakota to do a speech. I'm like, I don't care.
I saw that.
I'm getting in the car, and I'm going. I couldn't wait to get out there.
Very cool. Good for you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it still is a friendly story. The fact that China is now talking, hey, we got to switch up our feed ration here a little bit because, you know, corn is getting high-priced and all of that just tells me that the current demand situation is real. It's going to last for the rest of this year. And great for farmers. They've been waiting too long to have these pricing opportunities in front of them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's a wonderful opportunity. If you're doing it right, you're kind of healing yourself up from a few years of not wonderful things. But yeah, no, it's really been fantastic. Now, you mentioned the USDA potentially lowering the carryover in corn from a 1.5 down to a 1.4. And that 100 million bushel decline is going to be split between exports and ethanol demand. I guess, where does that 100 million bushels come from is my question.
Yeah. I think strongly that the export category, so demand would need to be increased there. I did not get a chance to hear your ethanol show yesterday, but I'm going to go back to it because I do know that you guys, I'm sure, had great conversation. But when you look at that... When you look at the corn use for ethanol category, the USDA already did a good job of reducing that demand because of COVID. But I really think it's going to ramp up a little bit more than what people are thinking. And just the biodiesel demand in general is going to be stronger for year end. So I'm very, very excited for the corn market and just the potential that still is to come.
So you think about 50-50, like so 50 million bushel export, 50 million bushel ethanol?
If I'd go 50-50, I think the corn export category has a little bit more potential for the short term. The ethanol part would be probably almost later on in the year.
I see. Okay. So, I mean, that's kind of what I was getting at that question, you know, how much you're increasing exports and how much you're increasing ethanol.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, like, if I had to pin it for the next report, you're saying. Yeah. So, I would say export demand needs to come up for sure in the short term, and then give it a month or two, and then you'll see that demand ethanol category increase.
Gotcha. Well, I guess, you know, 1.4, I think there's some people in the market that are thinking 1.2, 1.3 million or billion bushels for that corn carryover number. Do you think that's realistic, or at the end of the year, you think 1.4 is about as low as we go?
I would say 1.2 to 1.3 is very realistic for the end of the year. I think in the short term, you're going to continue to see them do their baby step move because that's mojo. That's what they do. So
that's what
in the short term, that baby step lower, and then by year end, I think that it's just going to continue to be get tighter and tighter, which of course is friendlier for that old crop market for sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you mentioned old crop. And, you know, the gains that we had on Friday were really coming in old crop corn. And if you look at the May corn chart, I mean, we're flirting with some of the higher levels that we've been in basically since the beginning of February. And it almost looks like it wants to break out to the upside here at this point. However,
with today's close. Yep.
Yeah, really. But then you look at new crop, and new crop December corn was not able to even take back yesterday's losses. And that chart, to me at least, looks like it wants to try to roll over to the downside. So what do we have going on there between that old crop, new crop spread? I mean, there's different sets of fundamentals at work here, or what are you seeing there?
Well, I think it's a combination of traders taking advantage of the spread trading right now to participate in the market. That's a way that you can participate. We know that the old crop fundamentals are friendly. The market, as a spread, had come back down lower, and now just in the past 2 weeks, the bull spreads are starting to come back to life. So we're seeing that with the May-December spreads, the July-December spreads. They're starting to kick into gear, especially with this recent Chinese buying. So I agree with you. If you look at the May chart from today, you got a little bit of an outside reversal to the upside. We're about 12 cents away from that February high, which was a bearish reversal. And so if that momentum can continue with some fundamental news to justify it to get up there, you're looking at $6 May futures sooner than later. And I think the safer way that traders are playing that right now is to use spread trades on the corn. So you're buying the May, you're selling the December. That way, in a sense, you're re-owning old crop, you're hedging new crop. Because on that report at the end of the month, that's what we're waiting for. If the USDA prints 92 million acres of corn, like is expected, that's friendly. Even if they print 93 million acres of corn, I just did some quick math. If they print 93 million acres of corn, and we assume like another 100 million bushels off that carryout, and that trend line yield, it takes ending stocks from 1.55 up to 1.62. I mean, that's even with 93 million acres. So we'll just got to wait for that report at the end of the month, and then we'll start to get a better handle on what new crop can do.
Okay. So, I mean, you're leading me right to where we wanted, where I was hoping to go here. and honestly, I think we're
going to team, Ted.
Yes, absolutely, Naomi. And, you know, time flies when you're having fun. So that's what we'll do. For the beginning of the next segment, I want to talk about what your expectations are for the acreage numbers that we're going to see at the end of the month report, that big prospective plantings report that we're going to see. So, everybody, listen, we're talking to Naomi Bloom from Total Farm Marketing, and come on back to AgriTalk. It's time for Pro Farmer Headlines with Davis Michelson. Davis, what's the news that matters most today?
Well, Jim Wyckoff, a veteran commodity market analyst, wrote Thursday's big price decline in crude fired a shot across the bow for raw commodity market bulls. This morning, workers at Argentina's Rosario Grain Port Hub will start a 24-hour strike. The past 3 days, USDA has announced 3.076 million metric tons of daily old crop corn sales to China. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, in opening the talks Thursday with China, detailed Washington's problems with China. The European Union's health agency said the COVID-19 vaccine produced by AstraZeneca PLC was safe and effective. The House passed two immigration bills largely along party lines, and logjams at U.S. ports are spreading beyond Southern California's choked gateways. ProFarmer members knew this hours ago, and you can too. Try ProFarmer.com. That's TryProFarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. My name is Ted Seifert from Zahner Ag Hedge, filling in for Chip Flory here on Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. We've been talking to Naomi Bloom of Total Farm Marketing. And yeah, having a great conversation there. I want to start getting into the acreage conversation and kind of transition to soybeans and then touching on livestock here before the end. So that's sort of the roadmap for the rest of the conversation that we're having. But before we get there, let's go back to the handsome newsman, Mr. Davis Michelson, for a quick market recap.
Well, Ted, July HRW wheat was a penny lower, 5.91 and one quarter. July soft red fell 2 3/4, 6.19 and one quarter. May corn futures 10 and one quarter cents higher on the day, 5.56 and three quarters. Dece corn closed at 4.69 and three quarters. That's up 1 3/4 of a cent today. May soybean futures 24 and one quarter cents higher, 14.16 and one half. Novi bean futures closed at 12.18, up 11 and three quarters today. May cotton down 55 points, 84.90, and Dece cotton firmed 14 to close at 82.73. Couple of tidbits on the livestock news. The key reversal lower yesterday dominated cattle trade today, with traders ignoring firmer cash markets to end the week. Cash cattle bids mostly steady to firmer. Boxed beef prices bounced off support this week. Overseas demand still improving. April live cattle 17 and one half cent higher, 118.40. June cattle down 97 and one half cents, 118.67 and a half. April feeders $2 lower, 139.42 and a half. April fat cattle on the week down 60 cents. April feeders down $3.80 on the week. And on the snout side, profit taking took the starch out of the lean hog market today. The product market continues to soar, and cash hog bids have taken on a firmer tone this week. April lean hogs a nickel lower, 94.25. June hogs up 57 and one half to close at $100.60. On the week, April hogs up $2.85. There's your quick market recap, Ted.
Wonderful, Davis. You are the man. Don't take off for the weekend just yet, because we're going to need you for the fourth segment. But we're getting close, buddy. We're getting close.
I'm here, bro. I'm here.
All right. All right. So back to talking to Naomi. We started to get into the acreage conversation there a little bit at the end of the last segment. But Naomi, I'm curious as to what your expectations are for the March 31st prospective plantings numbers that we're going to see from the USDA in just a little bit over a week. What are you thinking?
Well, I don't have too much of a disagreement with where the USDA is at currently. I do like that 90 million acre number for soybeans, you know, up about 7 million from last year, with as attractive as the bean price is right now and the demand story that's there. Like that 90 million number. Could it go maybe a little higher? Yeah, 90.5. I don't think it gets lower, though. I really don't. And the corn number, I think, needs to come up. So 92 is what the USDA had at their outlook forum, and I think 93 is, quite frankly, realistic. It's a beautiful spring. These people are going to be out there planting. Mm-hmm. You know, that corn, once it goes in, they like to keep planting corn. So I think probably we'll see 93 million on the corn side of things. So what's your take? I'm very curious as well.
You know, I'm not going to disagree with you. I would like to see more bean acres, because, you know, even with the 7 million acres, even with a better yield, even with lower demand, with the really tight beginning stocks that we're taking into next year, we're still in the same situation. Like, I feel like beans need 92 million acres, but I don't know if that's possible. And the same problem that I'm having is the question I'm about to ask you is, you know, when I add your numbers up, we're at 183.5 million acres of row crops. That's a really big number. You know, real quick math on what we did last year. I mean, yes, we know it's going to be a significant increase, because we know the last 2 years we've had prevent plant issues. But so in corn last year, we were 90.8. And then for soybeans, we were 83.1. So let's say that's 174, roughly 174. So we're talking roughly a 10 million acre increase. Where do we find the 10 million acres?
Yeah, and that's, you know, the cotton market is definitely going to be one of the losers of acres. Spring wheat, I think, is absolutely going to lose a whole lot of acres up in the Dakotas. The clients I'm talking to up there are, you know, definitely corn, beans, canola. Just the profitability of canola right now is strong. So it's going to be some of those other crops for sure. You know, and I think, too, of out in Kansas, we're very curious to see how this wheat crop fully comes out of the winter dormancy. The rain this week, of course, has helped, but we had clients saying, oh, no, I got no problem ripping up that wheat and planting sorghum instead. So this acreage battle, I don't think it's totally over yet. I think things can tweak, but you hit the nail on the head earlier. We need all of these acres. We could use soybeans having more than 90 million acres. We definitely need that corn number, too. So And then even with those acres, we still have to keep an eye on the weather markets. And then you got these spring and summer weather reports starting to come out saying, oh, it's going to be warmer than normal or drier in some of the western parts of the country. So every weather forecast is going to be traded. It's going to be, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to work nights all summer long because we're going to be trading every single weather forecast.
Naomi,
all summer.
That's a fantastic problem to have. I remember 2012 very, very well.
Yeah.
Oh, let's do that again. Yes, that sounds fantastic. Let's not have the same cut in yields that we saw in 2012, but let's at least get worried about it and trade it like that might happen, because that'll be fun. But really quick, you know, the numbers that we're talking about for new crop carryovers, that's given pretty perfect weather. I mean, you know, we need trend line yield. So the weather premium, when I think about what sort of weather premium we might end up having to put into these sorts of markets come April, May, June timeframe, oh boy, this could get really, really interesting. Now, I want to go back to something you were talking about acreage-wise, and I've heard a number of people say this. Cotton is going to be the big loser on acreage here. Well, I'm not going to fight you about that. But what I do want to point out, though, is, I mean, look at where cotton was back in July, August timeframe, when it was down at 58 to 62. We're trading 84, 85 cotton right now, which is, yeah, okay, so it's 10 cents off the highs. But cotton's gained some value, too. And from a percentage basis, maybe it's not as dramatic as what we've seen in the row crops. But I'm not so sure that the guys down in, say, Texas, I don't know if they're going to give up as many cotton acres as what I've heard some people suggesting.
And that's a good point. You know, let me piggyback on with this real quick, because I hadn't realized how strong our export sales for cotton have been.
Yeah.
And so, like, that was really eye-opening to me. I did not know that we are at 99% of the USDA's forecast already for cotton exports. Like, the demand is so strong, and I know that the ending stocks have gotten smaller. So now that I'm realizing this, now I'm like, oh, well, for Pete's sake, now we really got to watch that cotton report, not only at month end, but going into April as well. So there's now this demand situation for commodities is hot and heavy, along with stocks and supplies, not just grains, but now we have it for cotton too. Things are just, you know, suddenly it feels like it's disappearing almost before our eyes, and I'm like, how did I miss this cotton one almost? So exciting times for sure. And I think your point of the acres in Texas, maybe they don't get lost like people are anticipating.
Well, you know, just a quick recap of, you know, what we've done in cotton acres for the last 3 years. You know, in 1819 we planted 14.1 million acres. That shrank to 13.74 in 1920. In 2021, we're talking 12.09 was the last USDA projection. So we've already seen a 2 million acre shift out of cotton in the last couple of years. You've got an ending stock number that's the tightest it's been for a little while, and probably room to go lower, because to your point, that export number, the USDA just raised it, but they're probably going to have to raise it again. So there's a competition going on. And a lot of times people want to say, hey, you know, markets get soft going into planted acreage because, you know, especially if we're looking at a big increase in acres and, oh, we're going to fix our tight balance sheets by planting more. Well, are we going to do that? I don't know if we do, you know, and so this is kind of an exciting time. It's a much different feel of these markets than what we've been talking about. A year ago today, we were talking about, we're going to plant, we have an oversupply problem. We're going to plant too many beans. Yep. We're going to plant too many corn. We're going to plant too much cotton, too much wheat, too much everything. This is a much, much different story this year, much different conversation. Absolutely. And it's exciting. It is exciting. Now, for sake of time, we've got to shift gears a little bit here. Let's touch on wheat. Wheat was the stick in the mud today. You know, row crops had a nice little party today, kind of erasing a lot of yesterday's losses. Wheat did not do that, and the wheat chart all of a sudden looks a bit more concerning. What are your thoughts on wheat?
Yeah, well, I agree with you. Technically speaking, it looks like it's going to dive in the toilet here pretty quick, but wheat has been the follower in the complex, you know, this whole time. That's not a secret. So even though the U.S. ending stocks continue to start to edge lower, the global ending stocks are still deemed large and sufficient and near record amounts. So that's what's weighing on the wheat, why it can't get, you know, really moving. But, you know, give it till summer and you're going to see that wheat market kick into gear, because the wheat is going to be used as the feed substitute with these high-priced corn, high-priced soybean. You're going to see that wheat demand really kick into gear. So I think that it's going to be, you know, just kind of lower prices here for just a little while longer for the wheat, while popular corn and soybeans steal the thunder. But long-term, I think the wheat market comes back. Our export sales are at 91% of USDA forecast, so they're trending along really nicely. And I really do think that that wheat export number is going to kick into gear. We're hearing that China is buying the white wheat out of Washington State, which makes sense because it can get exported out the Pacific Northwest, you know, easier that way. So the demand is there, you know, and here in dairy country where I live, we're already being told that some of the dairies are not able to secure their soybean meal needs for the summer. So now you have dairy cows who are used to having this amazing feed, and now we're going to be able to substitute with wheat. So,
hey, Naomi, hold that thought. If you have the time, let's bring you over into the fourth segment. I want to talk livestock. So everybody, if you've got, well, keep it on. Let's talk livestock. Come on back there.
If the world is your oyster, we've got pearls of wisdom on AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. My name is Ted Seifert, and from Zahner Ag Hedge, filling in for Chip Glory here on a Friday. Fantastic bump music today, Joe. I'm really, Seven Nation Army was earlier. It was fantastic. Lime in the coconut. Yes. Also, Davis, don't mention oysters, man. I am so hungry right now. That sounds fantastic. I love oysters.
Well, I bet
where's
too, aren't you?
The good doctor, Jim Smith, is if he's listening, he's also a big fan of the oysters. So, yeah. Well, before we take off for our weekends and go play football, hockey, or whatever we do, I definitely wanted to bring Naomi back for a few moments here to talk about livestock.
Wait a second. Hold
go
on,
ahead, buddy.
On.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, see, I was afraid of this. Like, every week, about at this time, the AgriTalk record player, it seems to hit a scratch. It sticks. Joe, you got to kick the table, bro. You got to kick the table. It's stuck again. Joe?
Lime in the coconut and drank them both together. Yes. It's
I don't know
Friday,
what's wrong
everybody.
With that record player. And how does it know what time it is? That's the weird thing.
It just, it knows.
And by
it's
the way,
Friday.
Who uses a record player for radio anymore? Fly by my
own
organization, I tell you what.
I mean, I'd say that's retro cool. I think a lot of people would appreciate that.
Okay.
Sure. Thank you. Right. You know, but all right. Well, yeah, everybody, it's Friday. Having a good day, having a good conversation with Naomi. We had cattle on feed numbers come out just a bit ago. As I mentioned at the top of the hour, on feed numbers were 102% of last year, and marketed was 98, placed was 98. Pretty close to expectations. Naomi, what did you think about that?
Yeah, what I like about the bigger picture is I like that lower placement number and marketed number. Mm. It just keeps those deferred contracts overall friendly. You know, some people might think that that on-feed number of 102%, they would say, oh, more supply readily available, to which I say,
right. Yay,
grilling season is here. It's right around the corner. People have their stimulus checks coming. They have money to burn.
Yeah, indeed.
They're excited to go out. They want to eat out at restaurants, and they are ready to spend it. So I think that the short-term demand for cattle is just going to continue to be strong. Our exports are the strongest ever for first quarter ever.
It's really fantastic.
So, I mean, the demand is there. So pish-posh on that bigger on-feed number, the bigger picture and the bigger story is the lower placement, the lower marketed, just keeps the deferred contracts friendly for now.
Yeah. Well, and so, you know, when you look at April live cattle, it's been absolutely sideways for the past few weeks. But look at cash, right? I mean, cash has just been absolutely stuck in the mud at 113 to 114. It just won't budge from there. And, you know, when you see 102 on feed, I mean, that just kind of makes you say, okay, I kind of get it. But how long, I mean, does that cash trade ever change? Or when and what's going to have to happen for to get some movement there?
Yeah, I heard earlier this week one of my coworkers, John, had said that the cash trade was getting up closer to like 115 in some places. So, you know, there's little pockets of demand starting to spur higher. And as far as specifically what it's going to take, you know, I really think that this warmer spring and the grilling season is going to help by far. That's the biggest thing. And just getting some of these COVID vaccines out there more to more people. And then as soon as we can get the mask requirements to become a little bit more minimalized, people will be out more, and you'll see that demand kick up pretty quick.
So, you know, with the live cattle having a key reversal or big outside reversal day on Thursday and then following through on Friday, then after the market, we get these on feed numbers. Do you think we continue to slide in live cattle, or is this sort of a report a bit of a relief and maybe we found some footing and start to bounce on Monday?
That is what I'm wondering, the exact same thing, because, I mean, you're right. It was the June contract, the August, the October. They all had bearish reversals yesterday. But where we finished today was right on, like, the 40- and 50-day moving averages. That's right on that long-term uptrending line. So I would think that this report would keep us from falling apart, because the tone of it is supportive in the bigger picture. But if there's some technical selling that shows up, then, you know, sometimes those technicals just win out, like we saw in crude oil yesterday. So I'm very curious how Monday goes. The fundamentals are friendly, but the technicals absolutely look weak.
Yeah. So then we go to hogs, and we see, you know, on Thursday we had that reversal lower, key reversal in some of the contracts. Yet we didn't follow through to the downside on Friday. More talk about ASF, more talk about big exports potentially. What do you see in the hog market?
That market just continues to defy gravity. You know, I think part of the thing with hogs right now is do we really totally have a grasp on what's happening with China with the African swine fever? You know, there's some saying that the sow herd, exactly, the sow herd is down 5%, you know, and then there's the next breath China's saying, no, we need all this more feed, and so we're just not sure. But when we're not sure, we can look at the exports, and the export demand just this week finally took out last year's pace, and so now hogs, like cattle, are on their strongest pace for first quarter ever. So that demand is there, and China's been importing, and it's not only China. Mexico was a big buyer this week, and Japan has also been a big buyer. So we've got Easter around the corner, so we've got Easter ham demand coming. So for now, the hog market looks friendly, but yeah, we have to always be watching for a topping signal. Like you said, the market gave one off yesterday. So it does make you cautious, but boy, what a beautiful uptrend that market has had since December.
I agree, and I still think there's more to go, but we are getting to some pretty high prices that I think producers should be taking a look at protecting. So anyways, time flies when you're having fun. I know I've said that a bunch of times today, but Naomi, thank you so very much for coming on a Friday and extending the time and talking with us. It's been a great conversation. You have a wonderful weekend, and I will release you off into the world. Okay.
Be gone. All right.
There you go. Well, Mr. Davis Michelson, what a week it's been, man. Yeah.
It's been a heck of a week.
It's been fun.
Yes. And thank you for taking time to be with us this week.
Pleasure, man. Yeah.
Notching a few more host notches on your host belt.
Yeah, at some point we're going to have to count them, although I think it's just a lot at this point. But I'm more curious how many years I've been doing this. It's I think it's 4 or 5 years now.
That could sound right. The show just turned 7 like a few weeks ago. So it could be. Yeah. Wow, man. You're basically
a pro now.
Well,
it's been fun. I always enjoy doing it, and come on, you're the pro. But anyways, hey, listen, everybody, I hope you've had a wonderful week. I know I have. Thanks for listening, and on Monday, come on back to AgriTalk.
Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.